FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
We are back here on a Downtown Headed Home on a Tuesday afternoon. Rich Kimball with you, and on the telephone line, our friend from News Center Maine, Don Kerrigan, joining us. Hello there, Don.
Hey, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I just heard your ad. Was it for the First National Bank?
Yes.
Which is based in my town of Damariscotta. I think I had my first account there when I was 12. Because it was the only bank in town.
Well, there you go. Yeah, good to see they're still hanging in there. Some things stay around and stay strong and don't, you know, close down like radio stations. What?
Yeah, that's, you and I talked about that. I'm so sad about that. WZON, which was formerly WLBZ Radio, with a terrific history of broadcasting, is where I had my first paying job in broadcasting.
Right in this very studio, right?
Well, or something pretty close to it.
Mm.
Things are a little different than they were then, but I think it probably was right in that same space.
Well, and that's, I mean, we're sad here on a number of levels, but as somebody who grew up in the area and has been a lover of radio before I ever stepped into a radio studio, it's sad to see the signal go away, because this station, 620 AM, has been going for about 98 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable if you think about it. That it just all the, you know, from the early days of radio when it was established, for whatever reason, it was limited to, what, 5,000 watts daytime, 1,000 at night? Is that what it is?
I think that was the case, yeah.
Yeah, and so that it wouldn't interfere with, because AM radio signals go farther at night. So it wouldn't interfere with other big stations and other places. And I remember working there, we would have to punch a great big button at the proper time of day to reduce the power and write it down and take all those details. But it was, you know, it was one of the first stations in Maine, one of the very early ones. What a terrific history. And it's sad to see that go. And of course, symbolically, if you will, to see locally owned independent radio go away.
Absolutely. And look, there are fine people that work at the corporate radio stations as well, but it's not the same as having that local owner who has one, two, or three stations and just trying to serve the public and do what they can. Now, Stephen King was certainly a unique local owner when it comes to that, but I think approached it the way radio station owners used to, which was to sign the checks, but basically get out of the way and let the radio people make the decisions.
Well, that's right. That was the family, the Thompson family, Rhines Thompson family, that owned WLBZ back in the day when I was there. And owned WLBZ TV, WCSH radio and TV in Portland, and they also owned a radio station in Augusta when I was first there. And they were those local owners. They did have some family members working in it, but, you know, they let the managers do what they did. And they all, like the great tradition of local radio, is you look out for the local community and you do what is good for it. That's not to say that the corporate stations that we have so many of now don't look out for the local community, but the ownership's different, and there's it's just a different critter, I think.
Yeah, and I grew up in the heyday of AM radio, when you would, I know I did this, I mean, probably you too, I would take that transistor radio to bed at night and tune in those stations, from Boston, Buffalo, New York, New York City, Cleveland. You never knew what you could get at night with that AM radio.
Absolutely, and I remember I earned some money caddying and mowing greens and stuff at the golf course. And with that, I bought my first radio, a tabletop plug-in AM radio. And, yeah, and I would listen to WBZ out of Boston.
Yeah.
I occasionally listen to the local main station for some music. And it just fascinated me from the start.
Now, when you're talking about your television career, I was just chatting about this the other day with somebody, and I'm a little biased because I was there, but by no means was I instrumental in its success. But I was thinking about the newsroom that you headed up at Channel 2 here in Bangor in the 1990s. Yep. And when I think about the people who were in that newsroom, both on-air people, photographers, photojournalists, that has to be one of the best lineups, I think, in the history of television news in the state of Maine.
It was for a small market, small town market, which Bangor was and is. It was great. And I have to correct you. Sad to say, it was the 1980s, not the 90s.
Well, yes. Yeah, that's right.
But we had some terrific people. We had Jill McDonald, B.J. Smith, Tom Halleck, all excellent reporters. Ken Barlow doing the weather. Dale Duff and you doing sports. We had a woman named Jackie Goddard doing radio reporting. Got her start in Ellsworth and then came to us and then went to work at WBZ in Boston. And so we had a crew of very skilled photographers. And, it was great. We had a newsroom of, I think, 18 people, 18 or 19, back in the 1980s. And all those stations made big, really, for the time, made big investments in their local news and did local programs and other things, too. I mean, that was some of the benefit of local owners and managers who wanted to do everything they could for their audiences. And, the company I work for has maintained that commitment to news in Bangor and Portland and with some fabulous people over time. But inevitably, things change with different ownerships. And so it's evolved, as all of those TV stations have evolved too, just like the radio.
And you also worked with one of the giants in the history of Maine broadcasting. I think I worked with him my first year at WLBZ-TV, but the great Eddie Driscoll.
Oh, what a talent. Just a fantastic guy who just had this incredible talent to do comedy on TV. He had grown up watching and studying all the great old-time comedians, and he knew them all. He could recite their routines, and he could go into their characters, and he developed his own characters. He would just pull all those things out at any point, and he could make kids laugh, grown-ups laugh, just smart, very quick-witted, and hard to keep up with at some point. But, he was fabulous to work with. Yeah. A throwback, in some sense, to the really old days of TV. I'm glad I got a chance to work with him, but a terrific guy to know.
We're talking with Don Kerrigan here on Downtown. Now, maybe I have misremembered this story, but somewhere in the mists of the past, I seem to remember there being a story about you and a small plane and covering a story up north.
That was actually our buddy Dale Duff.
Was that Dale that nearly lost his life or thought he was going to?
Yes. So Dale and photographer Paul Salisbury were going to Aroostook County for a story. I don't remember what it was. And a coworker of ours had his pilot's license, and I think he was in like the flying club in Bangor or Brewer, wherever it was. So he was able to use a plane and arranged to fly them up there, and somewhere, I think, beyond Millinocket, they developed engine problems, which ultimately he said was carburetor icing, and they were losing power, and they had to land in a potato field, and they landed safely. I don't know about the underwear, how that fared, but. They landed. Say, I got this phone call. I said, "Oh, well, how you doing?" Said, "Well, not so good. We're in, I don't know, Littleton. I don't know where the heck it was. Smyrna Mills, maybe." And I said, "What are you doing there? By the way, you were in a plane." And he said, yeah, we were in a plane.
No.
They told the story. So I think we got somebody to drive up and pick him up and bring him back. Obviously, we didn't get the story. And the fellow with the plane did a little tinkering on the ground and waited for it to warm up and then managed to take off from the potato field and fly home. I hadn't thought of that for years. But all I will say about it is, I'm glad it was them and not me.
Well, yes, yes. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but when I got hired over there, pretty sure it was you took me around the building to introduce me to people, and you took me to meet the GM at the time, the late Margot Cobb.
Yes.
And a fabulous boss. Yes,
way.
And I knew Margot because we had done some local theater together, but I don't think you knew that. And you said, Margot, this is Rich Kimble. He's going to be joining us and doing some sports. And Margot said, oh, I know Rich. Rich, by the way, you left your shoes under my bed last night. And said it loudly enough for people around to hear.
That sounds absolutely like Margot.
She was great.
She was great. Margot Cobb was one of these people who had come up through the ranks, and she had almost literally grown up in sales. I think after the University of Maine, I think she went and worked doing soap operas in New York for a couple of years. And then came back to Maine and started raising a family and worked in sales there, got a divorce. And she worked her way up through the ranks. She raising her family, doing her job, ended up as one of the very first woman general managers in TV in the country. And she was smart. She was a tough cookie. She was the best boss I ever had as general manager, because she would give you hell if you deserved it about something, but she always had your back, and she would cheerlead, and if somebody outside was after you, she would protect you, and she had no reluctance to tell advertisers or somebody else, nope, the news department does what it thinks is right, and don't you try to influence it. So, you know, she was a great character as well, but just a great boss.
And I worked with her daughter Brenda for many years, and she was just an absolutely fabulous teacher.
Oh, interesting! I didn't know that. A Brewer native.
Yes, that's right. Now I wanted to pass this along to you. Our producer Kerry Haskell, who's down in New Orleans, joins us on Thursdays. He has the luxury to do that. But when he saw you were going to be on the show, he wanted me to make sure to pass along how much he enjoyed working with you on your radio outdoor show many years ago.
Yeah, that's back in the early '90s when I left TV for a few years. I did a weekly outdoors call-in radio show there on WCON for Dale, and when he was managing it, and that was fun. Learned a lot of stuff that I hadn't known before. I was no big outdoorsman, but he wanted to add that, so we had a good time doing that. Gary did great. Please say hi for me.
I will do that. Hey, I have to ask you before we let you go, Don. We're wrapping up one election season, getting ready for new folks to take over in Washington. But that sort of means we get right into the next one. Who do you see as the strong candidates for governor in 2 years here in Maine?
Well, I don't know who's strong, who will be strong, and who won't be. But you hear lots of names floated around. On the Democratic side, of course, people talk about Hannah Pingree possibly running. We're quite sure that former Senate President Troy Jackson will run. Very possibly Secretary of State Shenna Bellows. All of those names get talked about a lot. I'm sure there are some others. There's been great speculation, for example, whether Jared Golden would come and run for governor. Also speculation he might try to run for U.S. Senate because Susan Collins will be up for re-election. Personally, I might be proven wrong, I would be surprised to see Jared run against Susan Collins because he used to work for her
before
he ran for office himself. On the Republican side, you hear talk about Senator Rick Bennett. I hear speculation about radio host from Portland, Ray Richardson. There's talk about some others. It's going to be particularly interesting to me on the Democratic side. They're going to have to field candidates in the two biggest races in Maine, governor and U.S. Senate. Mm. So, you know, who's going to want to go which way, or will every party has its bosses or its most influential people or its money people. Will there be some pressure in different ways? No, you run for Senate, let so-and-so run for governor. The Republicans, of course, already have their Senate candidate. So, barring something unusual, they don't have to. They only need to focus, obviously, on helping her get reelected, but also on finding their best candidate for governor. There's some other people whose names I've heard and don't know if they're going to rise to it or not. This will be an open seat for governor, right? Janet Mills will be done her second term, and that always brings more candidates out of the woodwork. At the same time, they also have to think, well, if Jared Golden decides to run for something else, they've got to go find somebody to run for that seat. So it's going to be during this roughly 6 months of the new legislative session, I bet there's going to be a lot of whispering going on, a lot of little backdoor discussions. Good part of it will stay fairly quiet, I think, but you're going to see some jostling for position, and guarantee you we get into May or June, and there's going to be pretty much full court press from people trying to establish themselves. So I'm not doing day-to-day news anymore. I work and do mostly feature stories for our Evening 207 program, which is great, but still keep my eye on that political ball. So it's going to be fun to watch, Rich.
Absolutely. Don Kerrigan, News Center Maine. Don, always great to catch up with you, my friend. Thank you so much for taking time for us. And we'll catch you in whatever form of show we're doing down the road.
I look forward to it, Rich. Good luck and Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thanks. The same to you and Donna. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
That's Don Kerrigan with us here on Downtown.